disease causing scarring of the lungs. IPF can seem similar to other diseases, so many people with IPF may be undiagnosed or misdiagnosed for years. Symptoms include a persistent dry cough, shortness of breath, and a Velcro-like crackle in the lungs, which a doctor can hear. IPF generally affects people over 50 and is slightly more common in men, with a 5-year survival rate worse than many cancers. Diagnosis is important, as treatments are now available. The Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation strongly recommends you see a pulmonologist if you experience shortness of breath that limits your ability to walk up stairs or hills, or an unexplained persistent cough lasting longer than 8 weeks. Go to pulmonaryfibrosis.org to learn more about IPF.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County. The weather today is going to be sunny with a high near 48 with north winds 3 to 5 miles an hour. And tonight it will be partly cloudy with a low around 28. Calm winds becoming northeast around 6 miles an hour after midnight. Tuesday, chance of rain, mainly after 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It'll be mostly cloudy with a high near 41. East winds 7 to 10 miles an hour, and the chance of precipitation is 40%, with new amounts of less than a tenth of an inch possible. Tuesday night, they'll have rain likely, mainly before 8 o'clock at night. Cloudy with a low around 33. Northeast winds around 11 miles an hour. The chance of precipitation is 60%, with new amounts between a tenth and a quarter of an inch possible, depending on where you're at. And Wednesday night, it'll be rain, low about 45, and their chance of precipitation is 80%, and the new precipitation amounts between three quarters and an inch is possible. Thursday, it's supposed to rain again and quit somewhere late mid-noon time, something like that. And Thursday night is supposed to be cloudy with a low around 28. Welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and this is NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness's hour. Compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. There is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, where we are, we're all volunteers. We have no office. We have no paid staff. We work out of our houses, use our own phones, that sort of thing. And we try to help people through teaching classes. In fact, my wife and I just started this past Thursday with a 12-week class for families who have someone who they either know or a loved one or a blood relative who has a mental health issue. We run support groups so people, family members or friends or whatever can come and talk, and other people who have either been there and done that or are going through the same thing, they can talk about it. We have a thing called educating the educators. It's educating teachers, because in this day and age, a lot of times both parents work and teachers are the first ones to recognize something, quote unquote, not right with a child. We also try to enlighten law enforcement. And so all that is, you know, just a touch of what we do. And aside from this radio show, which today I'm very privileged to have two guests. They're in Stamford, Connecticut. Jay Ball, is that correct, Jay?
That's right.
I said that right?
Yeah, that's right, Larry.
All right. We also have Veronique Hubeka. Did I say that right, or did I kill it?
Yes, you got it.
I got it. Wow.
Yeah, it's a rarity.
Well, I'm not going to say it again, so because I figured I'd screw it up. No, I'm only kidding. Do you want to put it on speakerphone and see how it is?
Yep, we're on speakerphone right now.
You're on there right now?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Are we coming through okay?
You're coming through here okay. I can hear you very well, you know.
Good. Well, thanks for having us on the show, Larry.
Well, we appreciate it. Jay is a mental health professional with more than 35 years of experience working with homeless youth and adults with mental illness and addictions. And he's also vice president of Laurel House in Stamford, Connecticut. And he's introduced techniques of cognitive remedication to form the Thinking Well program, which helps people regain and improve cognitive skills impaired by schizophrenia and other mental health disorders. He's been overseas in the Peace Corps. He has a Master's of Science degree from Columbia University, School of Social Work, and he's also, his latest role is editor-in-chief of
www.r2r.org, and that's spelled out the letters r-t-o-r.org.
And that's resources to recovery?
Yeah, that stands for resources to recover.
Okay.
We're a gateway website that helps families find resources and support for their loved ones with mental health concerns.
Okay, and we also... You're talking from a personal perspective like I talk from. My wife and I have four children. Our youngest son has schizophrenia and has had it for the last 19 years. And he spent over 30 months hospitalized in state hospital. In fact, two of them, they transferred him from one to another. And when he got out, he was in and out of the hospital more times than we can even count. Right now he's doing very well. He has his own apartment and he has a part-time
That's
job
great.
4 to 5 days a week. He volunteers one day a week at the hospital. So, and he takes his meds religiously. I guess, I don't know, I attribute it to the fact that since he's five, he's had epilepsy and has been on medication. So the only thing he wants to know is, what is this med supposed to do? What effects does it have? Side effects, etc. And other than that, he religiously takes it. So we're very fortunate that way. Now, with you, I'm going to see if I can get your name correct again, is Veronique Hubeka?
Yep.
All right. You might want to get closer to the phone when you speak.
Okay. Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, great.
And she is the associate editor at rtor.org. And she has uses her bachelor's degree in psychology, as well as her internet investigative skills, to bring her readers new ways to enhance their wellness. She maintains and promotes the content of the website. Now, Jay, you want to talk about the mission of Resources to Recovery, how it was founded, and et cetera?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that, and I'll start by just reading the mission statement, which is on the About Us page of the website, and that is, Resources to Recover promotes positive lifetime outcomes for people living with mental illness by building on the natural strengths and expertise of families. And the most important part of that the mission statement is the last part of it, building on the strengths and expertise of families. And I come to that perspective just from my own personal experience. You mentioned your experience of as being a parent of someone with mental health concerns. I'm in a similar situation with one of my children. But, I also grew up with... I grew up around a lot of mental illness in my family with my siblings and other family members. As you mentioned, I've worked in the profession for 35 years as a social worker. And I'll tell you, I for those 25 years or so, and my experience growing up, I really thought I knew a lot about mental illness. And I thought I knew a lot about mental health problems. And it turns out that I didn't know nearly as much as I thought I did until I experienced it from the perspective of being a parent with one of my children going through things that I'd seen other family members go through and seen clients go through over the years, but never really felt it as personally and in such a devastating way as when I was a parent and watching my own child go through that. And that was really a formative and a life-changing experience for me, much more so than growing up as a sibling with mental illness in my family and being, you know, trained as a professional in the field. And so that's really why I'm involved in this project with the website. There are a lot of websites out there for mental health. NAMI has some great sites both on the national and the state levels and even some on the local levels. And probably does the best job of covering mental health from a family perspective. With our website, r2r.org, we're trying to do something that kind of complements that, maybe takes what NAMI does a step further by helping families to connect with actual resources in their community that might be available to help them. And the way that I hit upon doing that was that, I mentioned before, I thought I knew a lot. I really didn't know much at all until I experienced as a parent. And one of the things that happened to me as a parent going through this, there's what I call a cycle of discovery, where, at first you may, you begin to suspect, hey, something isn't right here. I'm seeing things. They don't seem right. I myself, although I've been around mental illness all my life, I've worked around it. I went through a phase where I was in, a bit of denial, seeing that in one of my own children. And so there was a process for me of, first of all, coming to terms with the fact that there might be a problem there. And then second of all, looking for the best care possible to help my child and to have like a fair start in life. And that was much more of a challenge than I thought. I thought as a professional who worked in this community for decades, I would know exactly where to go for help for my own child. And it was astounding to me that I didn't. When I needed help myself, my own family, I didn't know where to turn.
Right.
And it literally took me years to, it took us years as a family to put together the right team that could really help her, progress and kind of start on a pathway to recovery. And I thought that if it took me that long to recognize the problem and identify it and get help for my child, what are other families doing with that problem? How much time is wasted trying to get the right resource, connected to the right resources to help a kid need it and when the help can be most effective? And that's why, in effect, that's why I started the website, is to help families, just to shorten that cycle of discovery, to help families connect with resources for their loved ones in a faster and more effective way.
Yeah, I can appreciate that, because when our son he came home from the first semester of college and attempted suicide twice and was hospitalized, we had no clue what to do, who to see, where to go, And so I can appreciate what you're saying. And even though that you were in the business, I wasn't, or my wife and I weren't, it was just as confusing to us because we didn't know where to go. We didn't know who to see or where we could get help,
And it's the same story with so many families I hear.
Well, think about it. When most people have a child, whether it's son, daughter, it doesn't matter. They don't think, well, let's see, in 18 years, I may have to worry about mental health issues. They're thinking, in 18 years, what college are they going to? What are they going to take? Are they going to be a doctor, a lawyer, or, you know, whatever, an accountant?
That's right.
And they're not thinking about somebody getting a mental health issue.
Mm-hmm.
Or having, you know, a brain issue that causes a mental health problem. And they don't, you know, they don't look up where to go and what to do. It's only after it strikes do people, now what do I do? Where do I go? Who do I see? And they have no clue. That's why a lot of times people will get in touch with us and we'll direct them to various organizations that we know can help them. And, you know, because they have no clue as to where to go or what to do. And it's a shame.
It is a shame. And so that's really the problem that we're addressing. And, you know, the interesting thing about my experience, and this may be true, has been true with you, and certainly true with a lot of the other families that I spoke to, is, you know, as you know, decades in the profession, I had a professional network that, you know, kind of intact when this happened, but I still didn't know where to go for help. And where I originally went for help, I didn't get the help that we needed. And so I feel very positive and very confident about the team that we put together and have today. And that team consists of a lot of different, you know, professionals and organizations. It, you know, it consists of obviously of a psychiatrist, a therapist as well. But some things that, you know, not everybody, you know, considers at first is, well, what about the school? You know, is your child in the right school if they're a school age? Do you need an educational advocate to ensure that your child gets the education that they need and deserve? Right now, my daughter is with a travel trainer who's helping her to learn how to use public transportation.
Okay.
I never would have thought of needing that service.
Right.
As a parent.
Right.
When my child was born, but these are things that I've learned over the years, and I learned them not through my professional network. But I learned who the best providers in this community are from other family members. So every single provider that our family consults with now was recommended to us by someone else who had been through it before, and you know would say to me, you know, go see her. She's a great psychiatrist.
Right, right.
Try this school. Every single one was a recommendation from a family member, and I'm sure you see that in NAMI. I think. You know, in an informal way, in the local communities, NAMI does a very good job of identifying who the best are and pointing families in that direction. And that's what we're trying to do on a larger scale with the website is, develop our directory of family-endorsed providers who are mental health providers and related professionals recommended and endorsed by other family members.
Right,
and then so we have a directory. Right now, there are 21 providers in the directory, but we're really focusing this year on expanding that to cover all the services a family would need within the Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, and Massachusetts region.
Yeah, you know it's ironic when you were saying that your daughter is learning to take public transportation and such. When my son was discharged from the hospital after 30-plus months, and he had to go to a daily program at the hospital, and, you know, an outpatient program, but it was every day for about 6 hours, and we don't have a lot of transportation in the county we live in, but they had this thing called a link. And a lot of people who take the link are people with either mental health or whatever issues. My son says, I'm not like them. I'm not going on that bus. Those people are sick. And, you know, you sit there and you you shocked because here you've just spent 30 plus months in the hospital, in a psychiatric hospital, and now you're saying you won't ride the bus with these other people because they're sick and you're not like them, you know? And it just, he does ride the link now, I mean, because it's the only mode of transportation because he can't drive. But, you know, it's just kind of, you know, getting the trouble to get him onto the bus to take it and, you know, and not be upset by it was a big problem, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's sad, but that's the way it is. And Veronique, we need you to get near the phone.
Okay. I'm here.
Okay. You've got a blog that Just Right Wellness. Is that right?
Yes, Just Right Wellness.
You want to explain that?
Sure. Well, actually, the concept for the name Just Right Wellness is from the story of Goldilocks and the Three Bears, if you remember that from childhood.
Yeah, I think something like that comes back to my mind.
Yeah. And Goldilocks goes into the bear's house and finds a porridge that's too hot, a porridge that's too cold, and one that's just right, and it goes on for a bit. That's my approach to wellness, that it's all about finding what's just right for you in life and not comparing yourself to someone else's idea of wellness or the good life.
Okay. It's more or less like what works for you.
Exactly.
You know, it's ironic because I had a young Asian lady called me from Los Angeles on the radio, and she said that while we were talking, she says, well, I don't take medication. I said, okay, what do you do? And she suffers from severe depression and bipolar disorder. And I said, okay, what do you do? She says, well, I exercise a lot. I run. I said, that's great. And she says, I take holistic meds or whatever they call them. And I says, okay, does it work for you? She says, yeah. I said, well, keep it up. She said, well, you're not going to tell me to stop. I says, why would I tell you? First of all, I'm not a doctor. Second of all, why would I tell you to stop something that works? You know,
exactly.
I says, the only thing I would tell you is that maybe down the road you might have to consider taking a med along with your holistic and exercise. But right now, it's working. Keep it up, you know. And I tell that to people all the time. Whatever's working, if it's working for you, do it. You know, if you don't take meds, but you do this or that or the other thing, whatever it is, and it's working, do it. If meds are the thing, well, take your meds. You know, it's, you know, unfortunate that people feel that it's, oh, well, I'm not taking meds, so therefore I'm not following the, you know, the rules. Well, that's not true, actually, you know.
Yeah, and it's all about what works for you, and that everyone has a different life and a different brain chemistry. So if one person takes medication and the other person doesn't, it's all about their personal life, and that there shouldn't be any judgment between one or the other.
Right, exactly. You know, if we could, which is what NAMI tries to do here anyway, and I'm sure in the other chapters across the country, if we could stamp out the stigma attached to mental health, we would get a lot further than we have been. You know, a lot of people don't even want to talk about that they have it or have someone in their family has it because of the stigma that's attached to it. You know, I often use the example, if I said my son had cancer, everybody go, oh, Larry, what a shame. Can we help? How can we bring some meals over? Whatever. I say, my son is paranoid schizophrenic. Everybody takes two steps back and they, you know, shaking their hands like, uh-oh, you know. And it's, you know, the fact still remains that, although contrary to what you see in the newspapers, most people with mental illness will be victims rather than the perpetrators of a crime. And it's just so sad that we can't stomp out this stigma, you know. But that's another story I don't want to get lost on.
Yeah.
How do you consider wellness to be beneficial to mental health? What is your perspective on that?
Well, wellness is looking at your life as a whole thing. That there isn't just one part of you that's mental health, one part of you that's a physical health, one part of you that's an that's intellectual, one part that's good at your job, that you have to sort of take care of all of these different parts of yourself, or one will end up suffering. Or they all wound up suffering, depending on what the situation is.
Right.
So, and that way I think it makes the idea of mental health more approachable to the average person, because everyone has a mental health, whether they are just the average Joe, whether they have depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, bipolar. It's all about that it's something that you have, everyone has, and you need to take care of it just like you would take care of your body when you're sick.
Right. I agree 100%. Jay, just a quick question off to the side. It says you're vice president of Laurel House. Now, I met someone a little over a year or so ago who was in charge of Laurel House in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And she was on the radio here and everything. And shortly thereafter, I got an email from her that they had a closed the house. Is that part of your organization, or is that something separate?
It's not actually, but I'm familiar with that organization, and they had actually come to visit us before they actually opened the program in New Brunswick. A group from the board came up to Stamford to see what we were doing, and I think with the idea of trying to replicate it, and actually use the name too when they opened it.
You know, it's funny. I don't say funny, but it's kind of sad, because after the woman that was running it found out that they were going under, she asked me if I would stop by and talk to some of the people. And you could see that the people were just struck by sadness that they weren't be able to go there anymore, And yeah. I'm not sure why it closed or whatever, and I don't want to get into it, but just that it was a shame, because there was people, when I went there was about 15 guys there, varying in ages, and it was during the day, And it was like they had some place to go, and they were doing something, and it was, education there for them, learning how to do computers and what have you. And it was just sad that, and then when I saw that you were with Laura, I was wondering if it was the same, organization, and if so, why?
No, there's no formal or official link between the two organizations, but they did come to visit us in the early stages. Really, it's a kind of like a model for what they did down there. So, and Laurel House is still very healthy, active organization. We provide services to more than 700 people a year.
Is that in Stamford, or is that throughout Connecticut?
Well, we're located in Stamford, but we do have some mobility to our services, particularly in our education and in our employment program.
Okay.
So we help place people in jobs or in colleges and schools around the region, not just in Stamford.
Okay. No, I was just curious. I don't want to get off the record too much, but I was curious because the lady that was in it, she took it very hard from what I could tell, it's good, actually. I mean, whatever it did, it helped people for however long it was open, let's see. The family endorsed providers and availability of the personalized help from a resource specialist. You have a directory, you said, of that, right? Where do you get your info from? Is it from actually people who went to psychiatrist X or psychoanalyst B, or how do you get that information?
Well, we're a national presence with the website, and Veronique and I are blogging on a regular basis, a weekly basis, and providing information on the website to pull people in. But you know, the main objective is to get people to either use, consult, or make a nomination for the directory of family endorsed providers. So if you go to the website, from the homepage, you can very easily navigate the directory itself, and you can click a link and make a nomination right online.
Okay.
So that's what we're hoping people will do. You know, one of the things we're hoping people do when they come to the website is they go to the directory. You know, maybe they actually consult one of the providers in the directory. But at this point, we're trying to build it, so we're hoping that more people will go online, go to the site, and make a recommendation, make a nomination. It's a very simple process. We try to keep it as easy as possible. And that's how we intend to build the directory, with family members, you know, saying basically, hey, this psychiatrist, this therapist, this supported employment program, they really helped my son or daughter. I think you ought to consider them for your website.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next step in that process would be to vet the provider in-house, right? We do that with our staff and the help of an advisory group that's composed of professionals and family members. And we do our due diligence. We do research on the provider to make sure that they meet the standards of the website. So it's not just a nomination. That just starts the process. There is a pretty extensive vetting process that the staff and in consultation with the advisory group put them through before we actually feature them on the site. And finally, the last step is to develop a relationship with the provider so that we can facilitate the referral process.
Okay.
And so that's one of the services that we offer. The other main feature of the site is from any page on the website, you can access a button that will take you to give you a phone number or an email address where you can send a message to us and talk to a live person, a licensed clinical social worker who can help you with referrals for either a provider that you've seen in the directory, or maybe one you haven't seen but you're still trying to identify. And so, that's the actual direct service part of the website, is that people can call and they can actually get, like a direct live referral
okay.
to a provider.
Okay. We're going to have to take a quick break. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we will be back in just 2 minutes. So hang in there, guys.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the local affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdom on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we're very privileged today to have with us Jay Boyle, who's the editor-in-chief of resourcestorecovery.org, which is www.rtor.org, and also Veronique Hubeka. I think I said it right. I'm not positive. You guys there?
Yep. We're here.
Okay. Veronique, I'd like to ask, what do you mean by refined wellness to make it more approachable for people's lives, and especially people affected by a mental disorder? What is your so-called definition of refined wellness?
Well, sometimes people...
You're going to have to get closer to the phone there.
Sorry. All right. A lot of people think of wellness as this kind of hippie, you know, being one with the universe, cleansing auras, yoga type of thing. They don't see it as something that's practical or has real life results. And this way, I've tried to make it inclusive for all people with mental health issues or not, so that they can see how to balance their life through various tips, a lot of based in psychology, so that they can live the most well life possible without feeling like they don't live up to this yoga doing hippie standard.
Okay. Okay. Do you find that wellness for people who have a mental health issue is more difficult than someone who's has other issues?
Well, difficult can mean various things can be difficult for various people. So in their case, mental wellness would be a more difficult task for someone who is born with some type of birth defect. Physical wellness would be their difficulty. So if wellness still can be achieved, just everyone has their own sort of hurdles they have to get over and that they're faced. And it's more about, you know, looking at your personal victories versus comparing it to anyone else. So someone who has a severe mental illness, taking the bus to the store and back is a victory for them, and that should be celebrated. Where someone who is, for the first time in their life, experiencing depression and they decide to go see a therapist, that's a victory for them as well. It's all about, in the context of their life, what is success for them.
Okay. I just find that a lot of times people with a mental health issue, whatever it may be, I find that a lot of times they're not as willing to, accept the fact. It takes them quite a while to accept the fact that they have an illness. And I know with my own son, he would never say that he had an illness. He never said he had epilepsy, and he's had it since he's 5. And he used to have 7 to 10 seizures a week, but he never say he had it, you know. And it's just like with the mental health issue. He wouldn't say that he has it. He'd say that, he didn't feel good today. He was ill today. But he would never define what ill was at that point. And I find that a lot of other people are the same way, you know.
It's difficult because sometimes people might feel an illness sort of brands them that way for the rest of their life, and that's not a very happy thing to think about. So if you look at it through an idea of what you can do to be more well that day versus what is my illness going to do to me today, It's more empowering, it's more hopeful So there's a way to identify the challenges without feeling like, well, I'm up against a huge wall, this illness, and what's the point?
Right.
And it also, I have a lot of tips for interpersonal effectiveness or you know, family and friends relating to each other. So when you're put in that situation where someone's in denial, you kind of have to take care of yourself and figure out ways, you know, to deal with a more difficult family situation.
Right, right. I got to ask you, how did you get involved in this? Was it something that when you got your degree in psychology that you wanted to do this and then wound up, you know, doing what you're doing now? Or did you always want to do this or what?
Well, it was more of a surprise opportunity than a lifelong dream. I've always really enjoyed psychology and understanding the human mind. I also really enjoy writing and maintaining a website. So this was sort of the perfect blend of the two.
Mm-hmm.
And after spending 4 years studying psychology, it was made very clear that there is a big stigma against mental illness or mental health problems, and that there aren't enough resources, or the whole thing is very confusing to the average person. And this site helps, you know, dissipate some of that confusion.
Right, right. Now, I ask most people that I have as guests how they got into it, because I'm going to ask you too, Jay. But, you know, it's just like, you know, like sometimes people will say, well, I wanted to be, a lawyer. And when I went through school, I thought I knew that that wasn't for me. So I changed over and I became a nurse. And, you know, from there, worked in nursing and so on and so forth, you know. So I'm just curious how people get into their various occupations, you know. Jay, how'd you come about doing this?
Pretty much by accident and maybe by life circumstance as well. So I'm not someone who ever had a very clear idea growing up of what he wanted to do. I loved college. It was a great experience, but I left with a sociology degree and not a clue as to what to do with it. And I worked in a restaurant for a couple of years as a cook, and kind of enjoyed that, but found it not very fulfilling. And really, just on a whim, I joined the Peace Corps. I don't even know why I did that. It just entered my head one day to join the Peace Corps. I did it. I signed up for a 2-year term. And I loved it so much that I extended and ended up doing close to 6 years of service in Honduras, working with street children. Many of whom had very severe mental health issues, as well as dealing with challenges of poverty and abuse, having lived most of their lives and homeless in the street.
Right.
And when I came back to the United States, I knew that at that point I knew I wanted to work in human services. I thought I might want to stay working with, you know, with children, or maybe go back overseas and work in, you know, some form of development. But about that time, my brother, who was very close to me in age, and grew up with me, you know, in some ways my closest friend and peer, he became diagnosed with schizophrenia, and right about the time I was returning to the United States, and I'd been away for 6 years. I was looking for a job, and I just started spending time with him at the hospital, and later the halfway house where he was.
Right.
And from there, I think I fell into working in the field. It just seemed like a natural, you know, extension of my life.
Right. Right. Now I can understand that. It's just, you know, like I said, this is just my own personal thing since I've been doing this show for, I don't know, almost 5 years now. I just try to ask people, you know, how they got into it. And some people tell me, well, it's what I wanted to do since I was 10 years old and, you know, yada, yada. And others say, I had no clue. I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I just happened to wind up in it, you know, and I love it and yada, yada. But so I'm just curious, you know, Me personally, I hated school. I graduated high school when I was 17, and when I graduated, you either did one of two things. You either joined the military or you went to college. Well, I went in the military. I was 17. I went in the military, and I was there for 6 years. And when I came out, I really didn't know what I wanted to do, you know. And I, you know, got that job and didn't like that, and, you know, worked in a drugstore, and they were trying to make me a manager, and I didn't want that either. And then I worked in ShopRite for a while, and they wanted to make me some kind of department head, and I didn't want that either. And, you know, so it was kind of interesting how, you know, but I did finally get a job that I kept. But, you know, it, but it's ironic, you know, how people do certain things, you know.
It's really interesting how life works out that way.
It is. It really is, you know. And like I kid around, and I'm not really kidding, but I say since I retired about 7 years ago, I work harder now than when I worked, you know. When I worked, I was a boss. And all these people under me, you do this and you do that and have it in by Friday, you know. And now the only one I go to is my wife, and she looks at me and laughs, you know. So, you know, but yeah, right, I'll do it, sure, you know. But it says here you have a blog on the website called The Family Side, Jay. You want to talk about that?
Sure. So the blog is, you know, for both Veronique and I, it's really the main way to bring in traffic to the website. And we're writing about a range of mental health topics to draw on a range of different people. Like, so our ultimate objective is to help families that are dealing with, like, serious mental health issues in a loved one, and to help them connect with the resources they need. But with what we're writing on the blog, we're really trying to, you know, draw a much bigger audience. The reason for that is, well, you know, we're providing good information. It's information about mental health. It's that we really believe, and I think we're a public service information out there. But we're just trying to build up, you know, traffic to the people who really need us, who need our help and someone to talk to. Source. We want them to be able to find. We need to reach out to a broader audience. So that's one of the reasons that sometimes we're writing about broader themes. We both try to bring in our personal interest in life. So, you know, Veronique has a personal interest in a lot of the wellness topics that she writes about.
Right.
Both of us have an interest in popular culture, movies, and music. So, you know, I've written some. I've actually had a lot of fun writing about, you know, mental health recovery stories about famous people like Brian Wilson, the Beach Boy.
Mm-hmm.
There was a great movie about him last year. I wrote a very extensive post about how, you know, his life is an illustration of the concept of mental health recovery.
Right.
In some ways, he's very untypical because he's a very famous and successful person. But if you really look at the story, he's someone who experienced a pretty severe psychotic disorder and had reached a very, you know, had reached bottom in his life. And with the help and support of friends, family, treatment,
mm-hmm.
and also just, you know, also just his work.
Right.
And having something meaningful in his life, he was able to, you know, kind of pull himself back from the brink.
You know, it's ironic because I think that the more people, more famous, quote-unquote, people who come out and speak about it, the better it is. Demi Lovato, I'm a country western fan, have been for 40-plus years. So I don't listen too much to her kind of music, but she has severe bipolar, and she would, when she was on her high, She'd stay awake for 4 or 5 days. And she'd write 4, 5, 6 songs a day and thought it was perfectly normal.
Yeah.
You know, and now she's a big advocate for NAMI and mental health and getting help and so on and so forth. And she spoke at the national convention this past year. And, you know, she's a big advocate, and which is great, you know. So, you know, I think, like I said, more people like that and Brian Wilson and, you know, well, even John Nash. You know,
John Nash is another one I've written about in his recovery story, and so it's important to tell those stories to symbolize a kind of hope for people, but the bread and butter is writing about topics that really kind of cut to the heart of the matter and are practical advice for families. So I've also written. I've also written a piece on, what to do when a loved one is in crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So many families that I've talked to over the years, they don't even know that a crisis team exists in their community.
Right.
They may think that their only option is to call the police if someone is acting threatening or disturbed.
Exactly.
And so a lot of the conversations that I've had as a social worker with family members over the years, I'm now starting to have through the blog. And so, in a lot of cases, it's like practical information. It's like 8 tips what you do in a crisis situation. It just kind of walks people through a scenario. And, we get a lot of positive response to that kind of post.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the most visited page on the website is a piece that Veronique wrote, the difference, recognizing the difference between borderline personality disorder and bipolar disorder, which
right.
gets confused a lot. And now,
oh, yeah.
Veronique is not a clinician; she's not a mental health professional. She does have, she does have a degree in psychology and an interest in that topic, but she was able to write about a difficult topic like that and put it into terms that anybody could understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually the most visited page on the site. And most of the calls we get for people are coming in through articles like that. And by the way, I'll put it a plug that I mentioned we have a resource specialist available during the day to answer emails and messages and calls. So I'll give you that email address and number.
Yes, go ahead, please, because we've got about 3 minutes left. So go ahead and give it.
Okay, well, the email is help@r2r.org. So that's help@rtor.org. And the phone number is 203-724-9070. And so,
why don't you give it again? Why don't you give it again, real quick, Jay?
Okay, the phone number 203-724-9070. Email help@r2r.org.
Okay. All right, Veronique, I got one last question, and you got 2 minutes to answer it.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The bad effects and the good effects of the internet on mental health.
Well, I'll do the good effects real quick. Thankfully, it's allowed a place for people with mental health issues or family members to form a community and talk positively about their experiences without fear of stigma or judgment. It also helps get positive stories of recovery out there, not the news stories that get exaggerated. The bad effects are obviously cyberbullying, pro-anorexia websites, and various things like that. But one of the more difficult things to deal with is the WebMD culture, where people just kind of look up their symptoms and think they can diagnose and treat their mental health issues.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
In reality, you really need to get customized care, and that's recommended on it is probably the best.
Yeah, it's like almost anything else has good effects and bad effects, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's one of the reasons we offer an opportunity to call and speak to a live clinician.
Exactly, and that's a great opportunity to do that, you know, to have someone like that. I can't tell you how pleased I am to have had you both on the show. I will make one promise to you: you will come back.
Okay.
We will do this again.
Great. Would love to.
Awesome. Okay, because I think that what you offer is awesome. And I think that now that I somewhat have been able to pronounce Veronique's name, I'm sorry, but I'm terrible. But
okay.
You know, you should have known that when you met me in person at the conference. But anyway, no, I'm serious about coming back because I think you both have a lot to contribute, and I think there's always something that you can talk about and elaborate on that we didn't do today. And, you know, I just think that in the last 30 seconds or so, Jay, you want to give the phone number and the email one more time?
Okay. The phone number is 203-724-9070. We recommend that you email first to set up a call appointment, and you can email at help@rtor.org. That's help@rtor.org.
Okay, and I really appreciate it, and I tell you what, we will have you back again.
Well, thanks so much, Larry.
Thank you.
And, you know, I will email you, Veronique, for how to get downloaded this, okay?
Okay.
All right, great.
All right. You guys have a good day, the rest of the day, okay?
All right, take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Pat Smith. This is Patricia Gary Smith, LLC. The Hutterdon Chamber is a great resource.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Melody Burkett.
The Uber driver accused in Saturday's shooting spree in Kalamazoo, Michigan, is being charged with 6 counts of murder. Charges filed today against Jason Doughton include 2 counts of attempted murder. Doughton will appear before the judge later today by a video feed. Police say Doughton opened fire at 3 different locations Saturday night over a 5-hour span. 6 people were killed and 2 others were wounded, including a 14-year-old girl who is in critical condition. Donald Trump is the favorite to win the Nevada Republican caucuses tomorrow. Trump has a big lead in a recent CNN ORC international poll among Republicans in Nevada. He leads Florida Senator Marco Rubio 45-19%. Texas Senator Ted Cruz comes in third with 17% of likely GOP caucus goers. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush dropped out Saturday night after a poor performance in South Carolina. This